I'm Dave Lapham, and you're in the trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. Wayne Larrivee is our special guest today. Wayne Larrivee, play-by-play man extraordinaire of the Green Bay Packers. He's in the Wisconsin Broadcast Hall of Fame. He knows all there is to know about the Green Bay Packers. We caught up with information about Aaron Rodgers, about the offense, defense, special teams, every single phase of the matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals. Green Bay Packers are a good football team. Very, very good football team. They beat the San Francisco 49ers at the gun on the road. That's formidable. But they're both 3-1. They're both tied for the second best record in the National Football League behind the Arizona Cardinals 4-0. Going to be a battle at Paul Brown Stadium. Welcome to In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. We are in our outstanding studios, and we are joined by a very special guest. This guy is a busy man, but he is an extraordinary broadcaster, and he is the voice of Green Bay Packers Radio, play-by-play man extraordinaire. And we're talking about Wayne Larrivee. And, sir, appreciate you. Welcome to the our program here.
Good to be with you, Dave.
So, Wayne, let's talk about you first. You were born in Massachusetts. We have that in common. You went to Emory College, which is a heck of a school.
Yeah, Emerson College, right.
Emerson, I'm sorry. Emerson yeah. College. Emerson College in Boston is an unbelievable institution. And then you get right into the broadcast world. When you were growing up, I think I read where you were in the top of the Boston Garden with your trusty computer and your trusty tape recorder and all your trusty instruments and practicing being a play-by-play guy. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to date us anymore. We didn't have computers back in those days.
You're right.
Little tape recorders. So I used to go up there, and it was a great experience because, you know, this was the Celtics had very good teams. Havlicek, Dave Cowens,
yep.
Joe White, all those guys. They were great in the 70s, and they were playing the Knicks. And I grew up in the western part of Massachusetts back in the Birch years, right near the New York border. And our influence, our television, our cable TV were New York City stations. And right. So I was more of a New York kind of guy, big Yankee fan ever since my grandfather brought me up that way. So, you know, I went to college in downtown Boston. It was the best thing that could happen to me because I grew up in a very rural area, beautiful area up in the Berkshire Hills. But to go to downtown Boston, when my parents left me off in the Back Bay, I'll never forget it. It was Labor Day, 1973. They let me off, and I'm looking up at this old brownstone. Emerson is located in downtown Boston.
Yeah.
Looking at this old brownstone, I'm saying to myself, wow, they left me off at a ghetto. You know, little did I know. That's one of the most exclusive and expensive neighborhoods in the country. So, you know, you learn a lot when you go to school there. And I used to love to go to Boston Garden. I would broadcast the Celtics games into my tape recorder. I sat up in the hockey booths where nobody was. There were no sky boxes or anything like that. It was great. I did it every game they were in town for. I would go over there and do that.
Well, it certainly paid off. I mean, you've had an unbelievable broadcasting career. I mean, you've done the National Football League, you've done Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association, some college football, minor league baseball, college basketball. I mean, if there's a sport, you've done it. Do you have a favorite event that you've ever done?
Favorite event would probably be the Super Bowl. I've only done two of them, but that's the event of all events. I had a chance to do the Final Four on the local cast for Turner 2 years in a row, back in the early part of this decade. And, you know, so it was that was a great experience as well. But I would say the Super Bowl, probably the biggest event I've ever done.
And you did it twice. You were the Chicago Bears Super Bowl 20. You broadcast that winning effort there. And then, of course, with Green Bay, the winning effort that the Packers had in their Super Bowl. What's that like? I mean, I played in a Super Bowl and I broadcasted a Super Bowl, but lost them both to the 49ers and Joe Montana. What's it like broadcasting a winning Super Bowl?
You know, Dave, it's kind of an all or nothing type thing. You know, it's all in the afterglow. Once the team wins and that type of thing is a great experience. Otherwise, the process, and when we were in Dallas, we're in the corner of the end zone. It's not easy to do games from down there, especially one as big as the Super Bowl. Right. But, you know, so it's funny because that week in Dallas, they had an ice storm and people had trouble getting in there, and family and everyone kind of struggled to get there. And then there's the game and it goes back and forth. And when the Packers finally won it, I think we were all really happy that we had been there to the game. But had they lost, we would be complaining to this day about what an awful week that was in Dallas.
You do work with the Big Ten Network as well. You're a very accomplished guy. You're in the Hall of Fame, right? The Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame. So what's the most unusual event you've ever done? Somebody that has as much experience as you, I know over the years, sometimes we get asked to do kind of sporting events that people aren't too familiar with. Did you ever do any of those?
Yeah, boat racing. Doing boat racing. And down in Augusta, Georgia, it's the only time I've ever been to Augusta. Never saw the golf course, but we were on this little pond and we're doing boat racing. That was interesting.
Oh, that's great. That's classic. So let's talk a little bit about you've been with the Green Bay Packers now. How many years, Wayne?
23.
23 years and counting. That's unbelievable. How long were you in Chicago? You did everything. You did the Bulls, you did the Cubs, you did the Bears. I mean, you were Mr. Chicago. How long were you there?
Yeah, I was there 14 years. That was really the best years of my professional career in terms of the variety of things that I was doing, and it was great. And when I moved up to Milwaukee and started doing the Packers, I still did a lot of work in Chicago over the years. And, but hey, listen, that was an earlier time. Used to enjoy the challenge of doing multiple games in a weekend and that type of thing, but I'm happy doing one game a week now. That's pretty much my speed. I enjoy that.
I hear that. I remember one year I was doing high school football, college football, and an NFL game. You know, high school game on Thursday night, yep. The college game Saturday, and the NFL game Sunday. Oh man, that's a grind. That travels crazy, isn't it? I mean, that's a grind and a half.
There's no way. And now today, you know, it's tough because today the airlines don't have nearly as many flights. You have to transfer. They send you all different kinds of places to get to where you're going. Back in the day, I could do a game like I would do an Ohio State, Minnesota game in Columbus, Ohio in the afternoon, catch a flight, and had four different flights I could catch. If I missed the first one, I had two others I could get. Fly to Chicago, broadcast the Bulls game that Saturday night, and then go to wherever my pro football game was the next day. And that happened a lot.
That's crazy. That's a crazy schedule though. You're outstanding though. I mean, you're Hall of Famer. That says enough. Let's talk about this year's edition of the Green Bay Packers here for a little bit. The deal with Aaron Rodgers in the offseason. That's the only way I can explain the opening game loss 38-3 to the New Orleans Saints, because I look at it as an Aaron Rodgers factor, and I'm not sure you can probably, I hope you can explain to me which it is. Was it because, you know, of what went on in the off season and he came back and everybody's like, still not sure. Or was it that when he came back, he was so good. Everybody's like, we got this, and didn't quite get as ready as they should have gotten for the Saints. I mean, but it was the Aaron Rodgers factor, I guess, no matter what, or am I off base there?
You know, Dave, I'm not quite sure how much of a correlation there was to that game, because all indications are, and I watched most of the practices, as close as you can get to the team in this COVID era, which is not very close. It appeared to us and all of us to follow the team that they had a great camp. They accomplished what they wanted to do. They were ready to go. Everybody was healthy except for Za'Darius Smith going into that first game. They expected to play and come out, you know, gangbusters. They were actually happy they didn't have to go to New Orleans and play in the dome. They were in a neutral site. Yeah, it was going to be hot in Jacksonville, but that's okay. That game just all of a sudden happened and went sideways immediately, and none of us could believe it was happening. I don't think the players could either, or the team as well. I don't think it had anything to do psychologically with the residual of the Aaron Rodgers issue in the offseason. I don't think it had anything to do with other agendas on the team or anything like that. I just think it was one of those days, and the Packers hit one right off the bat, and that, that certainly was a wake-up call for sure. But I can't attribute it to anything in particular except that it just appeared to be one of those off days.
Yeah, sometimes stinkers happen, and you really don't know why.
Right.
Matt LaFleur was very, you know, we were embarrassed by this performance, and he came down pretty hard on the performance. And Aaron Rodgers, like, you know, I'm not embarrassed. We just played poorly. Everything's good. And, you know, I was thinking about the R-E-L-A-X, relaxed deal with Aaron Rodgers. And I'll be a son of a gun. This guy come out and won three in a row and averaged over 30 points a game in so doing. And he looks, I mean, the same. He is an unbelievable talent, isn't he, Wayne?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, we try not to take him for granted around here. He is an unbelievable talent. He's a much different talent than Brett Favre. We've been very fortunate to have two tremendous quarterbacks like that, two tremendous quarterbacks that played a long time, each one. And so, you know, you try to not to take it for granted, Dave, but I got a feeling that in a few years or whenever Aaron decides to hang it up or moves on or whatever might happen, that we're going to be sitting there saying, boy, we should have appreciated him even more. But no, I mean, he's been tremendous. He looks good. He feels good. It seems like, you know, they're like any other team. They're kind of working through the early season, figuring out how to get it done. I think the San Francisco win, where it happened, against who it happened, and how it happened. They fell behind the final seconds, had to rally for the 42-yard drive, 37 seconds ago, no time left. Mason Crosby hit a 51-yard field goal to win it in walk-off fashion. Those are the kind of moments that you know as a player on a team that we don't know how the chemistry is going to evolve year to year. Even if everybody or most everybody is back in the mix from the previous year, you still don't know what the chemistry is going to be. A moment like that can go a long way to establishing the kind of chemistry the team needs to have a championship caliber season.
There's no question about it. What was it like when Favre and Rodgers were both with the team and both of these guys with as much arm talent as has ever been in the history of the National Football League for a guy? And you got two of them, you know, competing against each other, throwing a practice every day. I mean, it's my goodness, we're looking at two Hall of Famers here. You weren't really sure at that time, but the way it's evolved, both of those guys on the same practice field, what was that like?
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I'm going to tell you a couple of stories here, and they pertain pretty much to Aaron Rodgers. So you've got Brett Favre, he's established and everything else, and Aaron Rodgers is a rookie, it's 2005. Mike Sherman is in what would be his last year as head coach. And Rodgers took it upon himself to consider scout team practice, scout team working against the veterans, the starters, as his game day. And so he was putting everything he had into scout team. And he was destroying the defense in his rookie year. And Mike Sherman at one point said to him, Aaron, cut this out. Stop it. We're losing our confidence on the defensive side of the football. And, of course, Aaron refused to do that. But he did that for the next couple of years as well behind Brett Favre. So it's 2007. The Packers making, I called it a blessed season, an unexpected run to the NFC Championship game. And matter of fact, get to host it in Green Bay against the New York Giants. They lose that game. But the losing coaching staff in each conference from the championship game in those days would go to Hawaii and coach the conference all-stars in the Pro Bowl. So Joe Philbin and Mike McCarthy and all these guys are in Hawaii at the Pro Bowl, and they're looking at these quarterbacks and Drew Brees and a bunch of other guys, and they're saying, wow, we got a guy who throws better than these guys. And they weren't talking about Brett Favre. They were talking about Aaron Rodgers. And that's when, after that, Brett retired, and then Aaron was given the job, and they went through the whole offseason with Aaron. They broke after minicamp. And about a month later, Brett's making noise that he wants to return, and the team had been turned over to Aaron Rodgers. So it was – but that gives you an indication of where that kid came from.
Amazing, amazing. You know, the Dallas Cowboys have the famous triplets, Aikman, Irvin, and Emmett. Triplets with the Green Bay Packers. I mean, pretty darn strong. Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Jones, Devontae Adams, right, at the receiver position. That's a pretty good trio right there. Like, pick your poison. Okay, do you empty the box and put some extra people out there in coverage? Because Adams isn't the only receiver, obviously, that Green Bay has. And then do you let Jones, you know, go against a light box, or do you load the box a little bit and take your chances? I mean, it's like, you know, pick your poison. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. That triplets right there, they're pretty good weapons, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are a good trio and, you know, great players at their respective positions, but also really good people, really great people. And they're on the same page. Now, the Packers have not gotten Aaron Jones what I would say. They featured him around the goal line against Detroit, and he scored 4 touchdowns. And, you know, he had some decent yardage, but he hasn't had the big run. His longest run is 15 yards. The longest run for the team is 25 yards. That was by A.J. Dillon. So they haven't really gotten the ground game on track the way I know they can. But I think part of that is going to be, Dave, when they get the offensive line back together. They are missing Elgton Jenkins. They are missing David Bakhtiari. That's the entire left side of the line. And when those guys are back and healthy, I think you're going to see the Packers start to open things up on the ground.
Let's talk about health, because not just the offensive line, there's some health issues. Alexander at the corner position obviously is a big deal with the shoulder problem that he's experiencing. How beaten up are the Green Bay Packers right now as they come to Cincinnati?
Well, you know, Dave, I always say to have a championship defense, you need studs on each level. And Kenny Clark has been a stud in the middle of the Green Bay defense at the nose tackle position. He's been outstanding this season. On the second level, your stud was Za'Darius Smith, who had 26 sacks in the last 2 years. And on the third level was Jair Alexander, who's your shutdown corner, second team All-Pro. Now, you're missing two-thirds. Za'Darius hasn't played a snap this year because of a back problem, had surgery a couple of weeks ago, hopeful of maybe coming back later this season. We'll see. Jair Alexander, they're trying to decide what to do with his shoulder injury. Suffered a shoulder AC joint injury against Pittsburgh, trying to tackle the big running back, Harris. And, you know, they're trying to decide, okay, if it's surgery, it's probably season ending. Can they treat this injury, bring him along, and maybe get him healthy enough to play in a few weeks? I don't know what they're going to do at this taping right now. I don't know what direction that's going to be, but there's no question losing two thirds of the studs you need on that defense, that's a big loss. This is going to be a big challenge. Injuries, Dave, change the trajectory of seasons. This is a good Packers team. 5 weeks ago, I would have told you they're a Super Bowl caliber team on paper, but we all know the game's not played on paper. And when you start snapping the football in September, all the other factors come into play, not the least of which is injuries. And so far, the Packers have not had very good luck with injuries.
And really, that's the key to success. You know, every successful season that I experienced as a player, minimal injury. And you never had a bad injury to somebody that you could not afford to lose. And when you start to lose players that are like, wow, I mean, these are premier guys, you're talking a much different composition of a football team. I mean, it's night and day. It's not even the same group that you're running out there.
I love the next man up mentality the coaches spew out. Well, right. If the next man up was so damn good, he'd be starting, okay?
Exactly right. Exactly right. Oh, man. So the offensive line got a couple of rookies starting in there. Is the offensive line, is it fairly solid? It doesn't seem like that's one of the bigger problems on the team.
No, I think the line has been solid. They've done a nice job in there. You know, when you look at the rookies, Josh Myers, whom Ohio people would know, has been just solid. From the word go, Dave, when they got him into camp at mini camp, from rookie mini camp all the way through, you know, the OTAs, the mini camp and training camp, he's been the starting center. It's like he's been there for 10 years and been very solid. Now, he's learning things. Obviously, he'll get better as time goes on, but he's been excellent. And then Royce Newman, guy they had high hopes for, and he's been plugged in at right guard. And I got to tell you something. You know, both those guys earned those positions. They're not playing those positions because people got hurt in front of them. They earned those spots, and they're fitting some of the veteran pieces they have around those guys. So I think when they get Bakhtiari back in a few weeks and when they get Elgton Jenkins back, which could be in a week or two or even this week, who knows. When they get those guys back into the line, you'll see a very good offensive line, as has been the case here over the last 2 years. The line has been a strength for this football team.
No doubt, no doubt. Davante Adams obviously is a premier guy, 31 catches, leading the entire league. The guy that I'm interested in is Randall Cobb, and Rodgers seem to have that chemistry that's hard to explain. And against Pittsburgh, Cobb was the guy that had the most third down targets. So, seems like Aaron Rodgers, you know, there's injury that might dictate what the reason that he might be targeting him more, but he is confident in targeting Cobb, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know what? They've always been good in those money down situations in the red zone, on third down, in key plays of the game to move the chains. I go back to a 2014 game against the Patriots, back and forth. the two best teams really eventually in the two conferences and in Lambeau Field. And there was a crucial third down. The Packers had to have it. And Aaron Rodgers went to Randall Cobb to get it. You know, when you look at an opener 2018, Bears were dominating the Packers. Finally, the Packers had a chance to win the game in the end. He hit Randall Cobb on about a 60-yard touchdown pass to win it in the very end of the ball game against the Bears. Hit Cobb on a famous touchdown pass to win the division over the Bears on the last week of the season in Chicago in 2015, something like that. So, I mean, you look at these hookups, these matchups, and Randall Cobb now can still play. But the chemistry, you're right, the history those two have make them very formidable to this day.
Mason Crosby has got a club record consecutive field goals that he's made. What is it, 27 or something like that? And how about overall special teams? Crosby obviously is unique. He's 2 for 2, 50 yards or more. Like you said, he had a game winner at the gun of over 50 yards. Special teams overall, how are they playing?
Well, it's been kind of spotty. They struggled on special teams the last several years. I think they're getting better. They appear to me to be getting better. They've got some punt and kick protection issues they're trying to clear up. You know, Mason has 24 consecutive field goals, which 24. Is the club record. But to be honest with you, before he broke that record, they had a field goal blocked by Minkah Fitzpatrick, who picked it up and returned it for a touchdown. But the officials ruled the Steelers were offsides. It was a questionable call, no question, no doubt about it. But they reloaded it, and Mason Crosby hit the field goal and had the record. You know, those issues, though, hey, that happened. Whether they were offsides by a hairline fracture or not, that those things have to be addressed. And they've had some coverage issues as well. But I think they have the makeup of a team that will get better on special teams as this season goes along. And I think, Dave, that's a big factor. That's an unsung factor in any team's season and possibilities.
Yeah, the hidden yards, boy. The average drive start, you know, the Bengals against the Jaguars, they were at a 10-yard disadvantage for every drive start possession. Their average drive start was the 17, and Jacksonville's was the 27. 10 possessions, that's a football field of hidden yards, you know? I mean, you're giving up a first down every time you exchange possession of the football. That's going to eat you up. I mean, those kind of things really hurt you. There's no doubt about it. When you
no question, David. And, you know, the thing about it is if your offense can start beyond its 30-yard line, it's a whole different deal. It's a whole different trajectory of that potential for the drive. On the other hand, if your defense can, you know, take the field with the opponents inside their 20-yard line or 25-yard line more often than not, that certainly helps that side of the football. If you don't have that dominant defense that's taking it away 20 or 30 or 40 times a season, that can really make a big difference in the way the game goes.
So in your conversations with people, and I know it is different with the COVID, like you say, it's COVID issues. It's tougher to have as much close contact with players and coaches these days. But what's the overall sentiment regarding the Cincinnati Bengals? What are people thinking in that organization about this matchup with Cincinnati?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we don't know a lot about Cincinnati, don't see them very often. And the Bengals haven't been on national TV a whole lot because they've been struggling the last couple of years, as you well know better than I. But I think that a lot of people, when you look at the tape and you watch the Bengals, you sit there and say, wow, this is a team that has a real shot to do something. And I can tell you this, Matt LaFleur is extremely impressed with what Taylor has done out there and with what this team has done, the way they put things together. You look at the numbers across the board defensively, very solid. There's no question about that. I think they're good on all three levels. And I really like their safety combination. Not many people talk about that, but I think those guys are really good. I think they're excellent. Linebacker Wilson is a nice player back there. I like the two defensive ends, and their nose tackles are huge. Their interior tackles are big. I think defensively is where that's going to determine how this team proceeds, and will they be one of those teams that jumps up and grabs a playoff spot. I think offensively they're going to be good. The quarterback's excellent. I just think he's the next star quarterback in the league. And then you've got pieces around him. Jamar Chase, you can tell. He's just a baby. He's just feeling his way. That guy's going to be a force before long. Maybe as soon as this week. I hope not, but maybe as soon as this week. And then, you know, you look at the Boyd kid, Tyler Boyd, excellent guy. coming out in third downs. You talk about a guy getting, when you need a third down, if I'm Joe Burrow, I'm looking for 83 all the time. And then T. Higgins, I keep seeing 85 out there, and I'm thinking I'm watching a tight end, and I'm saying a wide receiver. So this is a really – I think it's a really solid football team. And Duke Tobin, if I'm not mistaken, is it Duke's dad, Bill Tobin?
Yes.
When I was in Chicago, he was the general manager of the Bears, and they had some excellent teams. So Duke comes from great pedigree. His uncle, Vince Tobin, I'll tell you this story. His uncle, Vince Tobin, took over the Bears after Buddy Ryan left following the Super Bowl in 85. And the next year, Vince's Chicago Bears defense had better numbers than Buddy's 1985 Bears. So Duke Tobin comes from really good football stock.
Yeah, there's no question. It's interesting you mentioned, Matt LaFleur and his feelings about Zach Taylor, because Zach Taylor could not have been more effusive in his praise of Matt LaFleur. You know, they've been on the same staffs, and he said this guy's knowledge of the game and his work ethic and his ability to just grind and absorb tape and just never satisfied with the information that he has, and he's always looking for more answers to the questions in the test. He couldn't say enough good things about Matt LaFleur, so it's very interesting. Those guys have an intimate knowledge of each other. You know, you've got Daniels, who's on the practice squad with the Bengals. He's a former Green Bay Packer. Riley Reiff, you know, has played against the Green Bay Packers with the Detroit Lions and Minnesota Vikings two times every year prior to this year. So it's interesting, some of the connections. There's always maybe the Bengals feel like they have a little bit of intel on the Packers, but like you say, they don't play very often. So I don't think that's going to be a huge deal. I think they're just going to have to study the tape and draw their conclusions from the tape, you know?
As we have to.
Right. No question. So what do you see as a couple or three keys to this football game in your estimation?
Well, I think for the Packers, you've got to contain the running game, and you've got to you probably have to do it without filling the box. And that's going to be hard against Joe Mixon. Because I think with where the Packers are without Jaire Alexander, your safeties are probably going to have to play higher more often. And that could be a factor. They're going to need big play up front from not only Kenny Clark, but a kid by the name of Kingsley Keke, who had a strip sack of Ben Roethlisberger last week that basically turned that game around. This is a kid who has a higher ceiling than the other guys on the line outside of Kenny Clark. And the Packers are longing for someone, opining for someone to emerge on that defensive line to help out Kenny. Linebacker Devondre Campbell has been outstanding. Hoping to get Chris Barnes back this week, that will help in the middle of the defense. And I think they've got to get some pressure on Joe Burrow. No doubt about that. But, if they can do that, maybe they can force him into a quick throw here or there. But I'm really impressed with what Joe has done. And you and I talked earlier today how the thing that struck me was the game in Chicago. 199 passes without an interception, throws three picks on three consecutive passes. Oh, but the next pass went for a touchdown, and so did the pass after that, and the Bengals got right back into the game. So that showed me a lot about that quarterback and who he is. I think that's really what they have to do. Offensively, I think Aaron Rodgers has to get this game into the secondary on the corners primarily.
Interesting. You know, the watching both of these quarterbacks – I don't think anybody I've ever seen has more arm talent than Aaron Rodgers. And the thing, not only the velocity and all that, but the pinpoint accuracy in both of these quarterbacks. I think a big key is when they check down to their backs and it's, they get a linebacker running back mismatch and they get the ball out in space, like a long lateral and the backs out in space. You know, offense, basically fundamentally offense is trying to create space, and defensively they want to compress space. You know, they don't want all that space. So these guys put the ball in a spot where they don't have to break stride whatsoever. They don't have to work at all. And they hit him in full stride in one-on-one. That's a tough deal. These guys, but I think the guy who throws the ball like that the most during the course of the football game and leads to yak and rack and, you know, yards after catch, run after catch, all that, I think that's going to be huge. And both of these guys are as good as there is in the league in putting the ball in precise spots where the receivers don't have to work that hard.
Yeah, where receivers can make a play. You know, people, we laymen talk so much about, well, he's completing 78% of his passes. Yeah, but we're rating the completion percentage. We're not, you know, how many of those passes set up the back, to where he could actually make a play, or the wide receiver. You know, did he lead the receiver into coverage and get him blown up? You know what I mean? Maybe the receiver made a great catch. Was the pass thrown behind the receiver on that little slant that could have scored a touchdown but only got about 4 yards? That's accuracy. I don't really look – you know, this accuracy, oh, he's completing 68% of his passes or something. That's not what it's about. It's about where the quarterback puts the football. Does he give the receiver a chance to make the play?
That's well said. And finally, Aaron Rodgers. You know, everybody's got their favorite Aaron Rodgers story. You've been around Aaron Rodgers for quite a while. Obviously, a very unique individual, extremely intelligent, you know, raw IQ as well as football IQ. What's your best story you can give us about Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, there are a number of them, but I'll tell you this story. And it goes back to the 2016 season. Aaron and I used to talk when reporters were allowed in the locker room. We talk every Wednesday, or Thursday rather. And I would bring in my spotting charts, and he would, you know, go over, well, you know, kind of like this matchup here, and I like this guy. And it's nothing I would talk about on the air, but he'd kind of give me his insights as to what he saw and that type of thing. And it was very helpful. So we're in there, it's 2016, and the Packers are 4-6. And I'm looking at Aaron, and he's looking at me, and I'm saying, you know, I said, Aaron, what? This is not a good football team. He says, no, this is a bad football team. But a couple of days later, he goes out and says, I think we can run the table. And by God, they did. But believe me, it was all Aaron Rodgers that year, because that was a bad football team. And he got them all the way to the NFC Championship game. And he knew what he was working with. And that was what Aaron Rodgers at the height of his powers, in my opinion.
He is something else, boy. He is he's a special athlete. And how many years do you think he'll play? Oh, I guess, final question, I promise. A two-part question. How many years do you think he'll play? And will he be a Green Bay Packer after this year, in your estimation?
Boy, if I had the answers to those, let me put it this way. I hope he's a Green Bay Packer for life. I think that's really... that would be poetic justice, and I hope that's what happens. I really do. I also know that, you know, this season they're all in. And this is all any of us are focusing on, Dave, is this season. And the when you go all in, you push all your chips into the middle of the table. The hard part, the risky part of that is just what we talked about earlier. Do the gods come together? Does fate come together for you to win it all? Because, you know, you have injuries and you may not be able to get to where you need to go. And because you pushed all your chips into the center, what that means is you basically mortgage the future for the present. And the Packers have done some of that. And so I don't know what the situation would be. Capologists across the league tell me the Packers right now are 50, almost 50 million, 40 some million over the cap for next year. Which means what they'll have to do probably is blow the team up in one form or another. Now, would a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers want to be part of a rebuild? He's going to be 39 years old by then?
Right.
I don't know. You know, that's the thing. And so I don't think it's just going to be a matter of Aaron's mad at the front office or anything like that. I think the two sides are going to sit down and say, this is where we have to go. Do you want to be a part of this? Can we factor this in? How do we do this? I think that's the way it is, because I think the sides are getting along very well from what I can tell outside looking in. But I just don't know what the plan will be for next year. All I can tell you is this year, and I know this year, this organization, this team, these players are all in. And so far, the injury hits they've taken on defense are not good, but it has not dimmed the prospect and the expectations that this organization and this team has for this season.
Well, when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you know, that's a big, big chip right there. You can put in the middle of the table and say, we got a huge chip right here in our favor. And hopefully Joe Burrow has the career that Aaron Rodgers has had. Aaron Rodgers had a bunch of great years that he stacked together, and hopefully Joe Burrow's looking at the same thing. It'll be fun watching these two quarterbacks, and it was great catching up with you, Wayne. You're outstanding. I mean, this was
Very kind.
This was just a pure joy, man. Thank you for your time, and you're the best.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. All the best.
Hi, Dave Lapham here. Have you heard about In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, presented by First Star Logistics? Catch new episodes from the world of sports and broadcasting. Search for In the Trenches with Dave Lapham on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.